Keep up to date with the past on the 100 Years Ago Show with Mark Stein.
The Deutschmark drops, a king ascends, and Canadian football advances. It's November 1921.
100 years from today.
World News Update, the messy aftermath of the Great War continues in the new Weimar Republic that arose in the ruins of the Kaiser's fallen empire. The Deutschmark has dropped to an all-time low of less than one quarter of an American penny, with $1 now being the equivalent of over 240 marks. Against the pound sterling, it's currently around 750 marks, or a quarter of its value at the beginning of the year. As inflation spirals out of control in Germany, the Allied Reparations Commission has announced that they will be arriving in Berlin to determine the likelihood of Germany making its next reparations payment of 400 million gold marks to France due on January the 15th. The rampant inflation may be having an effect on German politics. We have mentioned before the National Socialist German Workers' Party under its charismatic leader Adolf Hitler. The National Socialists are not to everyone's taste, which is why they have a Saalschutzabteilung, the Meeting Hall Defense Division. Following a meeting at the Hofbrauhaus in Munich, at which Bolsheviks and others attempted to disrupt Herr Hitler's oratory, the National Socialists have now renamed the Meeting Hall Defense Division the Storm Division, Der Sturmabteilung, or SA. They wear brown shirts and serve as a paramilitary wing of the rising political party.
Mademoiselle from Armentieres, hallelujah. Mademoiselle from Armentieres, save to you. Sing it with all your heart and soul and see everyone ride up the pole. Mademoiselle from Armentieres.
To judge from the songs, most Allied troops in France received a warm welcome from the locals, but that may not be the whole story. Have American soldiers been hanged by the French without a trial? U.S. Senator Thomas Watson of Georgia says so, and his fellow senators have now ordered a special subcommittee to investigate. The U.S. State Department has notified the Republic of China of a default on Peking's debt of $5.5 million. China has significant government debt, much of which is held by the Americans. His Britannic Majesty's government has asked the Soviet regime in Moscow to be more specific regarding which pre-war debts of the Russian Empire it will pay back to Great Britain. Following his failed attempt to reclaim his Hungarian throne, the former Habsburg Emperor Károly was arrested with Empress Zita. There was then a diplomatic intervention by the Allies, and the deposed monarch and his wife have been deported to Madeira. The National Assembly has passed a bill barring all Habsburgs from participation in government forever, and repealing the so-called pragmatic sanction of 1713, under which the family had ruled Hungary. There were concerns that German monarchists might use the funeral of the late King Ludwig III of Bavaria to agitate for the restoration of the House of Wittelsbach. Instead, the ceremony with full state honours passed off without incident, and the pretender, Prince Ruprecht, avoided any mention of his claim to the throne.
I've got 10 little fingers and 10 little toes down in Tennessee waiting there for me. I never had a baby call me dadda. How proud I know I'll be when I hear it calling me. Oh gee, I'll miss every finger, I'll kiss every toe. At home, sweet home, I'll linger, for they'll need me there, I know. Although it only weighs 10 pounds and just one day old, I wouldn't give it up for all the world and its gold. For I've got 10 little fingers and 10 little your toes, waiting down in Tennessee for me.
It's now 20 little fingers and 20 little toes in the royal household of Egypt. Prince Farouk now has a little sister, Princess Fawzia, a first daughter for the Sultan and his second Sultana. After a prolonged absence in Paris for medical reasons, Alexander, the new king of the Serbs, Croats and Slovenes, has returned to the capital city of Belgrade and formally assumed the throne. Serb forces marked the inauguration of King Alexander's reign by invading Albania.
Here's a Japanese sandman sneaking on with a view. Just an old second-hand man, he'll buy your old days from you.
Beware the Japanese rail man. Hara Takashi became Prime Minister of Japan in 1918. He was at the Tokyo railway station preparing to board a train to Kyoto for a party conference when he was fatally stabbed by Nakaoka Konuchi, a railway man who believed Mr. Takashi was planning to introduce universal suffrage. For many years, the Emirate of Jabal Shammar on the Arabian Peninsula enjoyed the protection of the Turkish Sultan, but the Ottoman Empire is gone, and after many years of fighting, Jabal Shammar has been overrun by the armies of Abdulaziz bin Abdul Al Saud and been incorporated into the Sultanate of Najd. The All India Congress Committee has voted in favour of continuing its support of the Mahatma Gandhi's passive resistance movement against the government of the Raj. In the United States, the National Convention of the American Legion in Kansas City also saw the formal breaking of ground for the Liberty Memorial. Vice President Coolidge and General Pershing were in attendance, along with representatives of America's comrades in arms, Supreme Allied Commander Marshal Foch of France, Admiral of the Fleet Earl Beatty, Great Britain's first Sea Lord, Lieutenant General Baron Jacques of Belgium and General Diaz of Italy. Back in General Diaz's homeland, the Kingdom of Italy's unknown soldier has been buried with appropriate tribute at the Victor Emmanuel Monument. America's capital city has a fifth daily newspaper, this time an afternoon paper, the Washington Daily News. But is the future of news dissemination in radio? The most powerful wireless transmitter array on Earth has opened at Rocky Point on Long Island, New York. With 12 technologically advanced transmitters, the station is six times more powerful than that at Arlington in Virginia and has a broadcast signal that can reach halfway around the planet to Asia. In sports news, the forward pass is well established in American football, a reform dating back 15 years to a terrible season that saw the death of 19 players. It has now been tested in Canadian football in an exhibition game in Montreal between McGill University and a visiting team from Syracuse University. Robert Boo Anderson of McGill is the man who attempted the Dominion's first forward pass.
By the sea,
by the sea,
by the beautiful sea,
you and I,
you and I,
oh, how happy we'll be.
November so far has been anything but beautiful at sea. The French cargo ship Le Député Gaston Dumenil left Penarth Glamorgan for Rouen, but foundered in the Bristol Channel with all men lost. A storm off the coast of Cape May, New Jersey, has killed 11 fishermen who had been at sea to take up their fishing nets for the winter. 15 of the 19 crew on the Swedish cargo ship Belgrove died when the ship was lost in the North Sea off Denmark near Lundstrup. 16 of the 18 crew of the Norwegian cargo ship Alf died when the ship foundered in the North Sea off the English coast near Lowestoft.
Wait till you get them up in the air, boys. Wait till you get them up in the air. You can make them hug and squeeze you too. Or if they don't, just say you won't come down until they do.
It may be safer to fly. Test pilot Bert Acosta has won the Pulitzer Trophy in a Curtiss CR2 by establishing a new closed-circuit airspeed record of 176.7 miles per hour. Oscar Montelius, the Swedish archaeologist who refined the relative dating method of ciriation, is dead at 78. He and his late wife Agda, the philanthropist and suffragist, will be buried in a dolmen, a megalithic tomb common in Scandinavia during the Nordic Bronze Age of circa 1500 years BC. Antoinette Brown Blackwell was the first woman in America to serve as an ordained minister at the Congregationalist Church in South Butler, New York, from 1852. Women, she said, are needed in the pulpit as imperatively and for the same reason that they are needed in the world, because they are women. Women have become, or when the ingrained habit of unconscious imitation has been superseded, they will become indispensable to the religious evolution of the human race. Last year, she became the only surviving delegate from the 1850 Women's Rights Conference to live to see the passage of the 19th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. The Reverend Blackwell is dead at the age of 96. On this Armistice Day, America and Germany are finally at peace. To mark the third anniversary of the end of the war, Washington and Berlin have exchanged their formal ratifications of the peace treaty agreed earlier this year. Until today, only the bodies of presidents had lain in state in the central rotunda of the United States Capitol in Washington, but November the 11th dawned with the signal honor conferred on a man whose name we shall never know. A year after Great Britain and France entombed their unknown warriors at Westminster Abbey and the Arc de Triomphe, respectively, America has brought home the remains of its own anonymous soldier. Chosen, as we reported last month, by Sergeant Edward Younger from four unidentified coffins in France. This morning, the unknown soldier was borne by horse-drawn caisson in solemn procession across the Potomac to Arlington to rest in the low Virginia hills where America's heroes are honored. Accompanying the flag-draped casket on the final leg of a long journey were three presidents, Harding, Wilson, Taft, and distinguished comrades, Supreme Allied Commander Marshal Foch of France, America's General Pershing, Britain's First Sea Lord Admiral Beatty. World leaders were also in attendance, the French Premier Monsieur Briand, the Lord President of the British Privy Council Mr. Balfour, Japan's Prince Tokugawa, hailed by the New York Times as the last of the shoguns.
Yeah, my dreams, my dreams.
At Arlington, the unknown soldier was placed on the catafalque at a site designed to be equivalent to that at the Arc de Triomphe, and looking over the Potomac to the Capitol and the Washington Monument. A war bonnet was laid by the chief of the Crow Nation, and wreaths by representatives of the American War Mothers and the British War Mothers. Just as Britain's unknown warrior was presented with the U.S. Medal of Honor, so Admiral Beatty and the Earl of Cavan, the general who inflicted final defeat on the Austro-Hungarian army, conferred upon America's unknown soldier on behalf of King George V, the British Empire's highest award, the Victoria Cross. The marble sarcophagus was then dedicated by the President of the United States. "We are met today to pay the impersonal tribute," Mr. Harding told the assembled dignitaries. "The name of him whose body lies before us took flight with his imperishable soul. We know not whence he came, but only that his death marks him with the everlasting glory of an American dying for his country. He might have come from any one of millions of American homes. Some mother gave him in her love and tenderness, and with him her most cherished hopes. Hundreds of mothers are wondering today, finding a touch of solace in the possibility that the nation bows in grief over the body of one she bore to live and die, if need be, for the Republic. If we give rein to fancy, a score of sympathetic chords are touched, for in this body there once glowed the soul of an American." President Harding's speech was broadcast via telephone line to auditoriums in New York and San Francisco. Afterwards, the British Empire delegation announced the stately and impressive symbolism of America's mourning for her sons and daughters dead in the cause of liberty has deeply moved the hearts of their British comrades in the Great War. It is a worthy prelude to the labours of the conference which begins tomorrow. That is a reference to the Washington Disarmament Conference, hosted by President Harding, with representatives of Great Britain, France, Italy, Japan, and China, meeting to halt the arms race already underway among the world's powers. Madame Guérin has been a schoolteacher in Madagascar, a lecturer in the British Isles, and in America, after her promotions of the Red Cross and US war bonds, was hailed as the greatest of all speakers on behalf of the American war effort. Last year, invited to address the American Legion Convention in Cleveland, she came up with the idea of an Inter-Allied Poppy Day, inspired by the poppies in the popular Canadian poem by the late John McCrae, In Flanders Fields. Her notion was to sell silk poppies to benefit the hundreds of thousands of France's war widows and orphans. The American Legion christened Madame Guérin, quote, "the poppy lady from France," and the idea spread. The Poppy Lady travelled to Port Arthur, Ontario, and persuaded the Great War Veterans Association of Canada to adopt it. And then she went on to Liverpool and the British Legion to similar success. The silk poppies made in France by what the London papers describe as French peasants have arrived in every American state and throughout the British Empire. New Zealand ordered 350,000 poppies, but the ship bringing them is too late for this year's observances. Your World News Update. The messy aftermath of the Great War continues following the failed attempt by the last Habsburg monarch to reclaim his Hungarian throne. The Royal Navy cruiser HMS Cardiff has deposited the former Austro-Hungarian Emperor Karl and his Empress Zita on the Portuguese island of Madeira to begin a life in exile. Notwithstanding the pressure on the Hungarian government from the Americans, the fallen emperor must surely be wondering if any of his subjects still care for him.
I wonder if you still care for me. All day, dear, I pray, dear, that happy you may be. I'm longing to the west, God keep your love and bless you.
What do the people of Europe care for these days? Well, in Italy, a lot of people think fascism is the coming thing. The PNF, the Partito Nazionale Fascista, or National Fascist Party, has been inaugurated by its charismatic leader Benito Mussolini at a convention in Rome. It marks the transformation of what was hitherto more of a paramilitary organization into a political operation. In protest against the fascist agenda, Italian labor unions have called for a general strike within the capital city. Following the assassination earlier this month of the Japanese Prime Minister Takashi Hara, Baron Korakuyo has been installed as his successor in Tokyo. Representatives of Albania and the Kingdom of Serbs, Croats and Slovenes have appeared before the Council of the League of Nations in Paris and promised to respect the tentative boundary line between the two nations that the League's Council of Ambassadors have decreed. In the Soviet Union, Gosbank, the new state bank of the Bolshevik regime, has opened in Moscow. Great Britain's Chancellor of the Exchequer, Sir Robert Hawke, has informed the House of Commons that next year His Majesty's government will pay £50 million to the United States in interest incurred on US loans during 1921. There is a fragile ceasefire in Ireland, and talks are continuing between the government and Republican representatives, albeit with some difficult obstacles. But both sides are concerned that the slightest incident could ignite a powder keg. At Abercorn Barracks in County Down, Tad Barry, the Bolshevist journalist from Cork, was conversing with fellow prisoners about to be released. According to a sentry, Mr. Barry was trying to escape. The sentry, Private Barrett, fired, and Tad Barry is dead. Michael Collins, among others, is reported to be abandoning the peace talks in Britain to return to Cork for the funeral.
Across the sand.
Elsewhere in His Majesty's dominions, His Royal Highness the Prince of Wales has arrived in Bombay to a rapturous welcome. But in parts of India, the situation is almost as delicate as Ireland. In the ongoing Malabar Rebellion against rule by the British and high-caste Hindus, Gurkha units of the army have repelled an attack by Muslim rebels at Pandikad. Mapilla Muslims are supposedly the oldest settled native Muslim community in India. 122 of them were squeezed into a single railway car for transportation to prison. 64 of those prisoners have suffocated to death, along with 3 Hindus. In the United States, following an overwhelming vote in the Senate, President Harding has signed into law the Willis-Campbell Act prohibiting the prescription of beer for medicinal purposes. Doctors will still be permitted to prescribe 1/2 of a pint of whiskey and wine to their patients, but are limited to issuing no more than 100 prescriptions every 90 days.
Everybody loves a baby, that's why I'm in love with you. Pretty baby, and I'd like to be your sister, brother, dad, and mother too. Pretty baby, won't you come and let me rock you in my cradle of love, and we'll cuddle all the time. Oh, I want to love a baby, and it might as well be you. Pretty baby of mine.
Everybody loves a baby, but they can prove expensive, and mother, sister, dad, and brother are not always either willing or able to pay for them. The House of Representatives has voted 279-139 to provide federal funding for the care of pregnant women and newborn children. If this becomes law, other than assistance to Civil War veterans and World War widows, this would be the first social welfare payments by the federal government of the United States. Opponents say that it is unconstitutional and intend to take it to the Supreme Court.
Once I was everybody's baby, but right now I'm lonesome as can be.
Taxpayer-funded babies, how about no babies? Margaret Sanger is an advocate of so-called birth control and was speaking to an audience at the town hall in Manhattan about what she calls contraception. That's to say, devices that work against conception. The audience of men and women appeared to be enjoying the lecture until New York City policemen entered the hall and arrested Mrs. Sanger. Just one day after a record-setting theft of $2 million from the Central Post Office in New York City, the Department of the Post Office has suspended 3 senior officials at the branch and requested the U.S. Marine Corps serve as guards on mail trucks and railroad cars. In Argentina's San Juan province, Governor Jones has been assassinated. At the Basilica of Our Lady of Guadalupe in Mexico City, a fanatical anti-Catholic attempted to destroy the nearly 4 centuries old image of the Blessed Virgin Mary that had formed on the cloak of Juan Diego in the year 1531. The bomb was powerful enough to damage the altar upon which the cloak was displayed and many of the items around it, but the cloak itself and the image of the Virgin upon it were not damaged, much to the annoyance of anti-Catholics, the failed attack is now being cited as a new miracle of Our Lady of Guadalupe. Radio Broadcasting has come to Chicago with the new Westinghouse Electric Commonwealth Edison joint venture station KYW. Its programming consists of live broadcasts of the Chicago Opera Company's entire winter season, 6 days a week. Radio Broadcasting has also come to New Zealand. The Dominion's very first wireless broadcast was made by radio enthusiast Robert Jack from the Physics Department building of the University of Otago. The program consisted of a few words from Professor Jack, prefaced by a rendition of the song "Hello, My Dearie."
Hello, my dearie, I'm lonesome for you. I want you near me as honest I do. Come over, I'm all alone. That's why I called you by phone. Loving like this is some people admire. Cuddles and kisses you can't send by wire. I've got the blues. Don't refuse or you'll lose me. So honey, honey, or I will worry. I want you so, goodbye.
Radio has come to Chicago and New Zealand, and a public library has come to Mongolia. The National Library has opened in Ulaanbaatar with an initial donation of only 200 books, so you're advised to get there early. On November the 3rd, Bert Acosta set a new air speed record of 176.7 miles per hour. The record didn't even last the month. The same Bert Acosta, flying the same Curtiss CR2, has set a new world speed record of 197.8 miles per hour. Jenny Kidd Trout was the first woman in Canada to be licensed to practice medicine. Dr. Kidd Trout is dead at 80. President Harding's Thanksgiving proclamation notes how blessed America is. Mr. Harding says, "Ours has been a favored nation in the bounty which God has bestowed upon it. The great trial of humanity, though indeed we bore our part as well as we were able, left us comparatively little scarred. It is for us to recognize that we have been thus favored, and when we gather at our altars to offer up thanks, we will do well to pledge, in humility and all sincerity, our purpose to prove deserving. Now, therefore, I, Warren G. Harding, President of the United States of America, hereby designate Thursday, the 24th day of November, to be observed by the people as a day of thanksgiving, devotion, and prayer, urging that at their hearthsides and their altars they will give thanks for all that has been rendered unto them, and will pray for a continuance of the divine fortune which has been showered so generously upon this nation." The President and Mrs. Harding are passing their first Thanksgiving Day in the White House quietly, having dinner without guests, but they did attend morning service at the Calvary Baptist Church, and Mr. Harding then played golf with Secretary of State Hughes in a rainstorm so bad it was impossible to say who won. In an exclusive, the Pensacola Journal of Florida presented its readers with a Thanksgiving column by President Harding's turkey. Quote, "Before I go, I have something to say. Not so long ago, when I was selected to come to Washington for a session with President Harding, I made arrangements to write my story after seeing him. But I don't believe that I'm going to be in a position to talk then. That's why I'm doing it now. Snatches of conversation that I've picked up here have convinced me of several things. Harding, it seems, wants me to join the Department of the Interior. There's to be no closed-door policy in connection with my work. Everything will be on the table. I'm to figure in Harding's attempt to get Turkey and Greece together on China. And as they tell me, the boys with axes to grind do things up brown hair. I suppose I'll be in for a hard time. Kind of takes the heart out of a fellow to think about it. What gets under my hide is that all year long the Republicans are satisfied with an elephant, but when a special job turns up, Harding finds he can't stomach the pachyderm any longer and sends for me. But don't interpret that as an outburst against Harding. I like him and expect to become very intimate with him. Why, some of my ancestors were on the inside with some very noted people. I'm perfectly willing to give Harding everything I've got, even if it means my hash will be cooked later. I appreciate very much the honour that has been bestowed upon me, and am trying hard not to lose my head. I'm proud of the fact that I have not cracked under the strain, but I fear that will come later." Unquote. If you like this turkey's prose style, don't hold your breath waiting for a second column. On this Thanksgiving Day, Marshal Foch, Supreme Allied Commander in the late World War, is visiting the United States and has issued his own Thanksgiving message as follows. "On this, your day of thankfulness, I join with all my spirit in the prayers of gratitude for the blessings enjoyed by the world. My heart goes out to the members of the American Legion, whose guest I am in this country, to the millions of Americans I have seen, and to those whom I will have the pleasure of greeting. The more I see of Americans, the more I admire and respect them for their ambition, energy, and generosity of spirit. I am thankful today for being in your country, for being able to visit your historic shrines, for meeting Americans as I do, and hearing from their own lips their sentiments toward my beloved country, France. In Altoona, Pennsylvania, aboard his special railroad car, Marshal Foch will enjoy a real American Thanksgiving dinner of turkey and all the, quote, fixings, an American word the great war hero was delighted to learn.
Every morning, every evening, ain't we got fun? Not much money, oh, but money, ain't we got fun? The rent's unpaid, dear, we haven't a fuss. But smiles are made, dear, for people like us. In the winter, in the summer, don't we have fun? Times are bum and getting bummer, still we have fun. There's nothing surer, the rich get rich and the poor get children. In the meantime, in between time, ain't we got fun?
Are you familiar with the term price inflation? Well, this year it has come to turkeys in many parts of America. The U.S. Secretary of Labor, James Davis, says the price of everyone's favorite Thanksgiving feast is rocketing into the sky. I know for my part, if turkey goes to 79 cents a pound, I'll eat corned beef and cabbage for my Thanksgiving dinner, says Mr. Davis. For an affordable alternative, some suppliers are offering chicken for 35 cents dressed, or 20 cents on foot. In Chicago, however, the cost of an average Thanksgiving dinner is said to be 39 cents cheaper than last year. Thanksgiving is being celebrated in New York with a tradition unique to the city, mass begging. In Times Square, all paths leading from the subway have become toll roads, policed aggressively by extravagantly costumed boys and girls dressed in the tailcoats and crinolines of yesteryear. Subway passengers are gritting their teeth and hoping to negotiate their way through at only a few pennies per mendicant, but many New Yorkers would dearly like to be rid of this annual ritual. On the first Thanksgiving 300 years ago, the pilgrims and the Indians celebrated together. This year, the Jews and the Christians are celebrating together as two synagogues and three churches held a joint Thanksgiving service at the Temple Israel in Far Rockaway, New York. The sermon was delivered by Rabbi Landman, who has challenged Henry Ford to debate him on the subject of the famous automobile manufacturer's antipathy to Jews. The service concluded with a great American anthem. Years ago, Joseph Cohen, a poultry dealer, was sentenced to the electric chair for murder and was incarcerated in the death house. He received eight reprieves, including one that arrived 7 minutes before the appointed hour of his execution. This Thanksgiving, he was unexpectedly released from Sing Sing and ordered to face a new trial. Looking forward to dinner with his family at his attorney's house, Mr. Cohen says, "Tonight I know what Thanksgiving means. My heart goes out in thanks to God for his mercy toward me." The crowd at the Jefferson Theatre on East 14th Street in New York were enjoying the usual program of vaudeville and motion pictures when someone on the street outside noticed smoke coming out of a third floor window. The firemen decided they could contain the blaze without disturbing the patrons. However, they did advise arriving theatregoers as they entered that the building was on fire and they should proceed at their own risk. Nonetheless, a Thanksgiving crowd enjoyed the flickers of the pictures and the acrobats and the jugglers unaware of the flames above them. The arsonist, 14-year-old Louis Abramowitz, said he had started the fire to see the fire engines come. Thanksgiving, a long day with elderly relatives, can be very trying for a young lad. Many children are said to be unusually restless this Thanksgiving. That's because of enforced quarantines due to the diphtheria epidemic, which, among other things, has led to an increase in child myocarditis. Nevertheless, teachers are so anxious to get their young charges back in class that in many states, the traditional long Thanksgiving weekend has been cancelled and children will be in school on Friday.
Just an old-fashioned letter that lay on the ground. It came from a soldier, a boy tall. Before he ever could send it, he had to end it. "I love you" was all he could start. It was found without address, not even a name, so his message will never be known.
Just in time for Thanksgiving, the Allen Iron and Steel Company of Philadelphia has received a letter from the Brown Ketchum Iron Works responding to a request for illustrations of candelabras. The letter was mailed on June the 25th, 1902. And the company no longer makes candelabras, or indeed exists. 19 and a half years is a new post office delivery record, beating the postcard to Miss Sadie Gibbs of 201 West 105th Street, New York, which was mailed in 1908 and delivered just last Monday. Are you familiar with the telegraphone? It's the invention of a Danish scientist, and it can record your heartbeat, breathing, and other vital signs. Unfortunately, the American Telegraphone Company is now itself on life support and in the hands of a federal receiver following disputes between stockholders. If you're sick of turkey, how about corned beef hash? For many years, Maggie Maloney's celebrated hash, served up at Mark Hanna's house, was the preferred Sunday breakfast of President McKinley and Washington's top power brokers. Maggie Maloney has now received $25,000 in the will of Senator Hanna's widow. As always on Thanksgiving, crowds are thronging to the opera. The Metropolitan is said to be headed for a $20,000 Thanksgiving Day haul, thanks to Geraldine Farrar's first performance of the season in Madam Butterfly. On the other hand, it remains to be seen whether the show will go on at the new play, The Demi Virgin. It was closed by Pittsburgh police on the grounds of immorality, but in New York, the producer is vowing to defy the denunciations of Chief Magistrate McAdoo and keep it open. Over the river and through the wood is not as easy as it sounds. In Port Huron, Michigan, two women were drowned and a married couple narrowly escaped a similar fate when their auto machines went through the north draw of the Black River Bridge. Mr. and Mrs. Henson skidded on the icy planking, crashed through the guard gate and plunged into the river, but survived. A moment later, Mrs. Minnie and Mrs. Jerry's machine followed them through the broken gate into the freezing water below. The ladies were not so fortunate. Your world news update. The messy aftermath of the Great War continues. Reports out of the Ukraine bring news from the village of Bazaar. 443 troops loyal to the government of the Ukrainian National Republic, now in exile in Poland, surrendered to the Red Army. Of that 443, the Soviets have executed 359 by firing squad.
Johnny, get your gun, get your gun, get your gun. Johnny, show the Hun you're a son of a gun. Hoist the flag and let her fly. Yankee, do, do, do or die. Pack your little kit, do your grit, do your bit. Yankees to the ranks from the towns and the tanks. Make your mother proud of you and the old red, white and blue. Over there, send the word over there. That the Yanks are coming, the Yanks are coming. The drums, drums coming everywhere. So prepare.
It's over, over there, and they're coming back. The United States Army has begun its withdrawal from the occupation of Germany. 600 troops have left by train from Koblenz for Belgium, where they will board a ship for America. Emperor Yoshihito is only 42 and has been on the chrysanthemum throne for less than a decade, but he has never been a visible presence in Japanese life, and for the last 3 years he has not performed even his most basic duties, such as the official opening of the Imperial Parliament. Now, with his health said to be deteriorating further, his son, Crown Prince Hirohito, has been appointed Prince Regent. Japanese government goes on. Tokyo's position on its great regional rival China has been that the country's territory should be limited to what lies within the boundaries of the Great Wall of China. Now Japan has provisionally agreed to recognize Manchuria as an integral part of China. Dotty about that catchy Afghanistan tune, but Afghanistan is more than a dance craze. A treaty has been signed at Kabul between the Afghan and British governments under which no Soviet Russian consulates will be permitted in areas near the Indian frontier. The treaty affirms the border of India and of Afghan sovereignty west of the Hindu Kush and allows the Afghan government to import munitions through Indian ports. Britain and Afghanistan have agreed to the exchange of ministers at legations in Kabul and London. Britain will also be permitted to establish consulates at Kandahar and Jalalabad, and Afghanistan will have a consul general at the headquarters of His Britannic Majesty's Indian government, presently in Calcutta, but intended to move to New Delhi. In London, Their Majesties the King and Queen have announced the engagement of their only daughter, Princess Mary, to Viscount Lascelles, son of the Earl of Harewood. The jubilations are muted among some of the King's Irish subjects. Prime Minister Lloyd George has called off the London peace talks and informed the Premier of Northern Ireland, Sir James Craig, that Sinn Féin members would refuse to take an oath of allegiance to the Crown as a condition of serving in an All-Ireland Parliament. The uneasy truce between Irish Republicans and Unionists has now been broken with the murder of 20 people in Belfast.
Here's a Japanese sandman sneaking on with a view. Just an old second-hand man, he'll buy your old days from you.
We all know the Japanese Sandman, but what about the Japanese Postman? In Washington, at the International Disarmament Conference, the leading powers have acceded to China's demand that they shut down their networks of, quote, alien post offices in China. Peking says it has its own postal service with over 13,000 outlets and resents these rival foreign systems. America currently has one post office in China, Great Britain 12, France 13, and Japan 124. The conference nations have pledged to close them all by January the 1st, 1923. Elsewhere in the United States, Marshal Foch, Supreme Allied Commander during the late World War, has met with Sioux Indian leaders during a visit to Bismarck, North Dakota. The great war hero smoked a peace pipe with the Sioux and was given the honorific of Wattapesh Wakiga, or Charging Thunder. George Pierce has no plans to meet with Indians. In a speech to American businessmen in New York City, Sir George, Australia's Minister for Defence, declared that Australia was, quote, the only continent peopled by one race, and that, like the United States and Great Britain, it must remain a white man's country. There are some advantages of isolation, said Sir George. The United States has not only attracted many enterprising immigrants, but you will admit some who make neither for greatness nor safety. So far, Australia has attracted only the cream of the people of Europe. Up north in the senior dominion, Canada has been granted its own royal arms by proclamation of His Majesty the King. The armorial bearings are very similar to the British arms, but with some local flourishes. The Quebec fleur-de-lis in the lower right-hand quadrant and three green maple leaves below. The proclamation also makes red and white Canada's official colours.
Maybe the heart of a saint where sorrow grows. I found a rose.
You found a rose in the devil's garden? So what? Karl Reinmuth found a petunia in outer space at the Heidelberg Observatory. The German astronomer discovered a minor planet measuring some 17 miles in diameter and has decided to name it Petunia. At the Assizes Court in Versailles, Monsieur Henri Landru has been found guilty of the murder of 10 women and a boy. He will be executed by guillotine in the new year. In little over a year, the spree killer Eddie Adams has murdered at least 7 people, including 3 policemen, in the American Midwest. Twice sentenced to life in prison, he twice escaped his captors and resumed his killing. But his luck ran out in one final bloody shootout at an automobile garage in Wichita, Kansas. Edward Adams is dead at the age of 34. Lieutenant Colonel Charles Whittlesey received the U.S. Medal of Honor for his leadership of the so-called Lost Battalion in the Meuse-Argonne offensive during the war, but the loss of so many men weighed heavily on him. This month, he booked passage from New York to Havana on the British liner, the SS Toloa, on the first night at sea. Colonel Whittlesey is believed to have jumped overboard. He left behind a will and instructions to the ship's captain to throw his effects into the sea, which the captain declined to do. Do you remember the first time you danced to the famous Kiss Waltz from The Pink Lady? That was just one of many London and New York theatrical successes for Ivan Carroll, surely the most popular Belgian composer of our time. Mr. Carroll was attending a rehearsal of his latest musical comedy, Little Miss Raffles, when he suffered a hemorrhage. He is dead at the age of 58. Christina Nilsson was a Swedish operatic soprano and the only serious rival in her day to the great Adelina Patti. We would play you one of her gramophone records, but alas, unlike Miss Patti, she declined to make any, so her glorious voice will live only in memory. Christina Nilsson, the Countess di Casamiranda, is dead at 78. Ernest Wadsworth Longfellow, the landscape painter and son of Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, is dead at the age of 76. Frank Dunkley Currier, 68, former congressman for New Hampshire and author of America's somewhat distinctive copyright law, is dead at 68. Sarah Robinson, known to British Tommies all over the empire as the soldier's friend, dedicated her life to temperance and to improving the welfare of her country's troops, establishing schools, cafes, and a laundry in Alexandria in Egypt, for example. She is dead at the age of 87. So Abdul Baha, head of the Baha'i faith these last three decades, has died in Haifa in Palestine. He was persecuted by the authorities in his native Persia, but knighted by the British for his efforts in averting famine in Palestine after the war. He is dead at the age of 77. George Stephen had a modest start in life. He worked as a barefoot stable boy. He then went on to run the Bank of Montreal to build the Canadian Pacific Railway and Montreal's Royal Victoria Hospital, and to become a great friend of His Majesty the King. In British Columbia, they named Mount Stephen in the Kicking Horse River Valley for him, and he in turn named himself after his mountain when he was raised to the peerage. Lord Mount Stephen is dead at the age of 92. The World, November 1921.
100 years from today, 100 years from today.
The 100 Years Ago Show is a production of Markstein Enterprises and O'Kill Media. All rights reserved.